Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. A few weeks back, I posted the LQ status report, and that was a thread basically asking for members for a bunch of feedback. We get a ton of feedback, and one of the small things that we've implemented out of that thread is an LQ sitemap. Now, there's a link to the sitemap from every page on the site, and basically what it is a link to all the different parts of LQ. As we've grown over the years, we've noticed that many of the non-forum portions of the site just don't get the exposure that they deserve. By going to the sitemap, it gives you a quick, easy view of all of LQ, and it allows you to explore a little bit. Next story. Just a quick update that additional jobs are continuing to be posted to the LQ job marketplace. We're continuing to get very good jobs, and we're getting a lot of feedback on those jobs. So if you haven't seen the LQ job marketplace yet, head over to www.linuxquestions.org/jobs. You may have recently noticed that if you click on the search quick bar, what drops down is quite a bit more than what used to pop down. The quick search will now allow you to not only search the regular forums, but also the HCL, the tutorials, and even tags. You'll also notice that if you click advanced search, the actual search page has also changed to integrate tags and a bunch of the other sections of the site, and even include some external resources such as the LQ Wiki. The last LQ story I have, you'll remember a couple podcasts back, I announced the new LQ bookmarks. The new site can now be considered out of beta, and we're now redirecting all the tags and user entries from the old site to the new site. If you haven't checked the new site out yet, head over to www.linuxquestions.org/bookmarks. And once again, all the old tags and user entries from the old bookmarks.linuxquestions.org site will now redirect to the new site. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is open source. Architecture or goodwill? Now, this was sparked by a debate between Jeremy Zawadny and Matt Essay about whether companies like Yahoo and Google are good open source citizens. And as Tim O'Reilly had posted an interesting radar piece, and for those of you not familiar with radar, you can find it at radar.oreilly.com. And the piece is about the future of open source in a world that is increasingly web-based. And here's a quote from that post by Tim. Quote, "There are a lot of reasons why people make their code open source. I believe that one of the strongest original motivations has often been overlooked. Our hierography tells the tale of how it all started with the quest for software freedom. But, contemporaneous with Richard Stallman's story, other people were taking the same path, and that is releasing source code, for a very different reason, the architecture of Unix." End quote. Now, I think it's clear that the software as a service movement certainly has the potential to shake up what open source means to software in general, since really a lot of applications now, distribution becomes a moot point, because when you use, say, Amazon's S3, you'll never redistribute the code, so whether or not it was open source, it kind of changes the paradigm and the context of redistribution. To make some insightful points, and here's another quote from that post, quote, "But in the world of Web 2.0, applications never need to be distributed. They are simply performed on the Internet's global stage. What's more, they're global in scope, often running on hundreds or thousands or even hundreds of thousands of servers. They have vast databases and complex business process required to keep those databases up to date. As a result, one of the motivations to share, the necessity of giving a copy of the source code in order to let someone run your program, is truly gone. Not only is it no longer required, in the case of the largest applications, it's no longer possible. That's why companies are having to think about new ways to quote-unquote open source their product. In the O'Reilly Radar executive briefing at OSCON, we looked at three of those ways." End quote. Now, the GPL v3 does make an attempt to address some of these issues, but the software world, I think, is rapidly changing right now, and we could very well be at an inflection point. Open source may very well have to go through an evolution here to keep pace. Here's hoping our leaders and visionaries are listening. And I think, indeed, as Tim stated, the story on this one has not yet been written. The next story I have is HP offers Debian Linux support. So Hewlett-Packard is throwing its support behind Debian and is the first Tier 1 hardware maker to align itself with the non-commercial, community-based Linux offering. From the article, quote, We've had a number of customers continuing to ask us to have broader support for Debian, and HP decided to oblige, said Jeffrey Wade, Worldwide Marketing Manager at HP's Open Source and Linux Organization. Red Hat and Novell will remain HP's main Linux partners globally, however. End quote. So, according to the article, HP will offer technical support for installation and configuration during a server's warranty period, and then later this year, they're going to begin selling what they're calling care packs to help customers with Debian problems. There was no details on what a care pack constituted, so I don't really have any further information on that. HP has had a long history with Debian, though, and many will likely find it surprising that there's no mention of Ubuntu here, and the word Ubuntu is not mentioned once in the article. I think it's an interesting move, but you should take note of the following. And this is a quote from the article. Debian won't be on the same level as Red Hat or Novell, though, Wade said. HP won't market it, and customers will have to download the software on their own. Software combinations with partners such as BEA Systems or Oracle will not be available with Debian, and HP won't formally certify Debian for servers. End quote. And despite those caveats, and they are some pretty big ones there, this should, I think, serve to further solidify Linux in the server market. Not that it really needs it, but any extra step, I think, is good. And it will be interesting to see how other OEMs react. I think HP could be a possibility as the OEM that jumps into the Linux on the desktop game wholesale first. They're obviously not ready to do it yet, but they kind of stand out to me as the most likely for the first tier one provider to do that. And basically it's because they're looking for any way to get a leg up on Dell that they can at this point. And a good Linux strategy on both the server and on the desktop may just give them the extra boost that they need. But I think it's pretty clear that this offer is aimed at the technically savvy crowd who just wants to buy HP hardware and then are fairly comfortable with Debian support on their own, but they just have probably higher-ups that want that number to call if they need it. The next story I have is first open-source Java code promised for October. Following up on an earlier promise, Sun will be publishing the first parts of its open-source Java in this coming October, which is just over a month and a half away. More code will follow soon after, with the process hopefully being completed by the end of 2007. The first bits to be open will be the Java C and the Hotspot VM, which isn't surprising since decent open source implementations already exist in both of those spaces. From what I've seen, a license hasn't been decided on yet, and that was one of the major bones of contention after the original Sun announcement, so we'll have to see how the licensing plays out. And with that lack of licensing info and details exactly on what Sun will be open sourcing overall with that end of 2007, the article here really doesn't give us much more than we already knew on the direction of the initiative, but we do finally have a firm date for when it's going to begin. Now, obviously, it's great to see Sun quickly following through on their promise, and I think we're all anxiously anticipating watching this unfold, especially with regard to what license they're going to do this under, and to the extent of what they will open source. You know, Java is kind of a nebulous term. You know, will it include any of the mobile stuff, or the class libraries, or how far do they plan on going? And I haven't seen any firm commitment there. Obviously, in the end, this could really have far-reaching implications, not only for open source, but for mobile computing and really computing in general. The next story I have is Firefox crop circles. You really gotta hand it to the Firefox enthusiasts and Firefox fans out there. They're a phenomenally dedicated bunch that just continue to show incredible ingenuity when promoting Firefox. And as you know, in the past, they've funded a full-page New York Times ad, they've launched a Firefox weather balloon, and now we have a Firefox crop circle. And this is, for those of you who haven't seen this story, an actual crop circle, about a 220-foot-wide crop circle, in fact. Now, the group that organized this was the Oregon State University LUG, so if you want to see all the pictures, and like I said, there are literally hundreds of them, you can head over to lug.oregonstate.edu. Aside from the load of pictures, you have to say that this really is quite an impressive feat. They actually got the permission from a farmer, I believe it was the wife, to get permission to do all this. They had a large team, they had a helicopter involved. I mean, it was quite an undertaking. And in the end, the thing actually looks phenomenal. It really does look exactly like the Firefox logo from a distance, which considering they did not use GPS, it was just an HP graphing calculator and some string and other things. Like I said, quite impressive, and I do encourage you to head over and take a look at it. Now, while on the topic of Firefox, I recently noted that the 1.5 branch had been a little bit unstable and slow for me compared to earlier versions, and the mention of that on the podcast got a lot of corroborating feedback, and others having the same issues pretty much cross-platform even. So I've updated to the latest 1.5.0.6 recently at the request of someone from Firefox that actually shot me a quick note after I had made that comment. And so I'd like to give an update now that I have been running it for a good amount of time. Performance here has definitely been improved. I had some odd delays, especially on tab switching before. I can say that's completely gone, and interactivity in general just feels better. On to stability, it is improved, but I still don't think it's quite to the original level of the older 1.0.x releases. I still get the occasional crash, and while where occasional is much more consistently than I would like, and I have, I think, with 1.5.0.6 had two crashes in the same day, which I definitely consider too much. The other thing is, I still get the issue where the actual content window pops out of the Firefox frame, for lack of a better quick description, and that one I also consistently get. I can't go more than a couple of days with the browser open without getting that. So all in all, a very good release, and they're definitely making significant progress here in the right direction, which is great. And I suspect probably by the next release, if not one more, they'll have all these issues banged out, judging by the difference just with this one release. But I'm interested on the experience you guys have had, so let me know how you're doing with 1.5.0.6 Firefox, and I'll be sure to post an update to the podcast. The last story I have is the real Lenovo laptop deal. Now, contrary to the details in the original story, which I covered in a previous podcast, Lenovo will not be preloading Linux on a new ThinkPad. From the article, quote, "The new Linux-enabled Lenovo laptop launched this week at LinuxWorld will not actually come preloaded with Novell SUSE Linux," a high-ranking Lenovo official said, contradicting some industry reports stating otherwise. Agarwal maintained that Lenovo will be the first mobile PC maker to provide full phone support for a Linux laptop. Moreover, all Linux drivers needed for the T60P will be downloadable directly from Lenovo's website. But he told Linux Planet that the T60P, an inch-thin, 4.7-pound laptop based on Intel's Centrino Duo processing technology, will be sold with a, quote, blank hard disk. Now, obviously, this is not quite as exciting as the original speculation, and it's certainly now not the breakthrough deal that we need for OEM Linux. That being said, it is, of course, a step in the right direction, and it's good to see proper phone support and Linux drivers available directly from Lenovo. And I think they are one of the first major manufacturers to at least acknowledge Linux drivers are an issue and have them available directly on their website. At over $3,000 for a 14-inch screen on a laptop, though, I just don't see this being a big seller in the end, and it is only this one model. In the end, I think this is another small iterative step in the evolution that will probably realistically still take another couple of years. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.